Well, thank you very much for the invitation. So it's my first time in Austin. So I was expecting more a seminar for graduate students. So I'm afraid this is going to fly below your below your ears or below your heads. So this is supposed to be a warm up talk for my talk tomorrow in the geometry seminar. And what I'd like to talk about really to review is a construction which associates to an abelian category. It's whole algebra, which is an associative algebra over C. Now the advantage of this construction is that a number of interesting algebras, of well-known algebras, arise as whole algebras of suitable abelian categories. And the algebras I have in mind are typically quantum groups, but perhaps more elementary, the ring of symmetric functions, and so that produces sort of familiar examples, but thinking of them as coming from abelian categories actually produces natural elements in these algebras, and in the best of scenarios, actually natural bases for those. So it's actually, even from this point of view, it's interesting to know that you come from an abelian category. Okay, so let me then explain how you do this construction. So I'm going to start with A, then an abelian category. And I'm going to make a strong finiteness assumption, which is that the homsets in this abelian category are all finite. So the typical categories I have in mind are the most elementary one is, for example, the category of vector spaces over a finite field. More generally, we can consider the category of modules over an algebra where R is finite dimensional algebra over K, which is again a finite field. And perhaps an example of a slightly more geometric flavor is to consider, say, coherent sheaves on some projective. So smooth projective variety, again, over a finite field. Okay. So given such a category, then we look at the set of equivalence classes of objects. And as a vector space, the whole algebra is just the set of functions on this set with finite support. So that defines it as a vector space. And to define it as an algebra, one introduces a convolution product. So which is given by the following. So the convolution of F and G, we have to define what its value at the object M is. And this is going to be the sum over all subobjects of M of F evaluated at N times G evaluated at M over N. And so notice that this sum is well defined is finite because F has finite support, so he's only interested in finitely many isomorphism types N arising, and for any of those I have to think of how many ways I can think of it as a subobject of M, but that number is bounded by the Homs of n into m, and that by assumption is finite. So this is a finite sum. Okay. And now the claim is that this vector space together with this bilinear operation is an associative algebra with unit the function, which I'll call 1, 0, which is just the characteristic function of the zero object. And so actually, I thought, why not we could actually give the proof of this fact. It's a simple proof. So let's see what we have to do. So we take three functions. And we evaluate the triple product in this order. So that means I have to sum over subobjects of M of F1 convolved with F2 evaluated at N, and then multiply time by F3 evaluated at M over N. And then in turn, to evaluate this convolution, I have to sum over subobjects of N. So then I'm actually summing over two-step filtrations of M of F1 of P, F2 of N over P, F3 of M over N. All right, okay. So now let's try to... So that's what this product gives. So now let's work out the product the other way around. Okay. Well, again, for that, I have to sum over subobjects of M, which this time I'll call P, F1 of P, F2, F3 at M over P. And now I have to sum over subobjects of the quotient, which is to say subobjects of M which contain P. So F1 of P. What I should put here is F2 at the intermediate object, which is then F2 of N over P, and then F3 at M over P. And so these two things are the same. And it is also clear that the characteristic function of the zero object is a unit, because you see if you write this product like that and say F is that characteristic function, then this will only score when N is the zero object, and therefore this quotient is M, and so it will return G of M. Eraser. Okay. Okay. So maybe just a small remark that which is sort of a simple homework. If you try to work out what the n-ary product of n functions is, well, you won't be surprised to find, given that proof there, that this then turns out to be a sum over n-step flags of m of the functions evaluated on the successive factors. Okay, so let's look at the simplest example that I gave earlier, which is the category of vector spaces over a finite field K. Then the isomorphism classes of objects are in bijection with the natural numbers, and if I take a natural number here, I associate to it the class of the n-dimensional K vector space, which I'll call 1n. So now I'd like to compute the convolution of the convolution of the of 1m and 1n over the p-dimensional vector space. So this is going to be, well, this is going to be a sum over all, maybe I'm just going to repeat it, sum over all subspaces of this, of 1m of u times 1n of kp mod u. And of course, this is, so this is 0 unless, if p is not equal to m plus n. And if p is equal to so then this is only interested in the m-dimensional subspaces, so I have to count the m-dimensional subspaces of Kp. And so this is the cardinality of the Grassmannian of p-planes in K, sorry, of m-planes in K to the p. So let me just remind you. I mean, let me just remind you that one can define, just to remind you what this is, one can define Q numbers. So if I call the cardinality of the field K, Q, I can define Q numbers like that. Likewise, I can define Q factorials like this. And then the Grassmannian, the cardinality of the Grassmannian, is the Q binomial coefficient P over M, which is P factorial over M factorial M minus P minus M factorial. Okay. And what we've proven here so is that 1M convolved with 1N is equal to this binomial coefficient times 1m plus n. So in other words, we've proved that the whole algebra in this case is isomorphic to the polynomial algebra in one generator, where x to the n goes to 1n, and then I have to rescale it by n factorial. Okay. Okay, so maybe I can give a second example. I mean, when one where the category is not semi-simple, as was the case here. So I'm going to take A to be the following category. So I'm defining it algebraically, and then I'll give two other characterizations. So it's going to be the category of pairs Vx, where V is a finite dimensional space over our finite field K. And X is an endomorphism of V, which is nilpotent. Okay. So we can say this in two different equivalent ways. This is the category also of coherent sheaves on the affine line, which are supported at zero. Or I can also say this. This is also the category of representations over the same field K of the quiver with one vertex and one loop. Okay. So then I should be interested in determining what the isomorphism classes of objects are, and it follows from the Jordan normal form. Okay, that the isomorphism is such an object is given, of course, by the dimension of V, which is an integer, and then the Jordan blocks of X, which give a partition of that integer. So in other words, the isomorphism classes are labeled by the set of all partitions. So by which I mean just lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda n. So these are partitions with a finite but a priori unbounded number of parts, and then which we can do, we just order like this. Okay, so that's that, and then let's compute some. Let's compute a couple of actually just one product. I would like, I mean, maybe this is already clear at this point, but I just wanted to stress that when you compute products in the whole algebra, you really are always counting points over a finite field of suitable correspondences or other varieties of that kind. So let's try to compute the following. So I'm going to take this function here. So this is the delta. So you remember, now we have an object for each partition. So this is the simplest possible partition. So 1 corresponds to, so the partition 1 corresponds to the vector space K, and of course the 0, I mean the only nilpotent endomorphism I can think of, which is that. So I'm going to try to convolve these two things. And I'm going to wonder, what is the value of this on such a thing? Now, this is clearly 0 unless V is two-dimensional, right? Because again, I should be summing over sub. So the quotient I should have a subobject of dimension 1, and the quotient should be of dimension 1. Okay. So that leaves me basically with two choices. I have to. So this is going to give me one contribution, which is. The value of this on the two-dimensional vector space with a zero endomorphism. And this is now, so this is the cardinality of a certain set. And what is a set? Well, this is a set of all possible ways to put this line corresponding to this inside a two-dimensional vector space. So this is, again, this is P1 of K, which is Q plus 1. Remember, Q is a cardinality of the field. And if I try to do now the only other two-dimensional representation, which is this one here, well, then the subobject, which corresponds to this, this is a line. And this line necessarily has to go to an element in the kernel of the endomorphism. And this kernel is one-dimensional. So I have only one scale such worth of such choices. So this is the cardinality of K star, so this is Q minus 1. So what we've shown right now, just now, is that this convolution is equal to 1 plus Q times 1 of the partition 1, 1. This is this object here, plus 1 minus Q times 1 of the partition 2. That's my choice.
Oh, that's what you call that's
my yes. That's my choice. So of course, I mean, as this makes it clear, this is sitting inside a larger category. And I could think of that, and you get interesting answers, but more complicated. So this is the simplest case I can extract out of P1. Okay. So with this takes a bit more work, but with more work, you can show in this case that this whole algebra is freely generated as a polynomial algebra by the characteristic functions of these objects here. So remember, 1R is a partition 1, 1, 1R times, and that corresponds to just the simplest nilpotent representation, which is K to the R with a zero endomorphism.
Where did you get the minus sign?
Sorry, I didn't get the minus sign. You're right. Thank you. Okay, so as I was saying, with more work, you can show that this is freely generated by this object, and then it's not difficult to see that this is actually isomorphic to the ring of symmetric functions in infinitely many variables. Which gives an interesting connection with this theory of such functions, in particular with Hall Littlewood polynomials. Yes. Except that I'd have to modify my initial definition, so yes. But yes. Yes, this is over the integers. Okay. And maybe this is not the subject of the talk, but maybe just a remark for you, for those of you who know this ring here. Here there are elements which are called the Hall Littlewood polynomials, which are polynomial of symmetric functions which depend upon an additional parameter q, and which interpolate between the monomial functions, which give a basis of this ring, or the symmetrized monomial functions, and the Schur functions, which give another basis of that. And here we have these canonical elements, and these go exactly, and here there is a parameter q which you don't readily see here, and these standard elements go exactly to the Hall Littlewood polynomials under this isomorphism. So this is... Yes, so as if, well... You're absolutely right. As I've set it here for now, q is a number. But yes, of course, then you also show, I mean, that's part of what I will say later, you also show that the structure constant actually depend polynomially upon q, and so you can phrase it the way you just said. Okay. So let me mention some further structure on the whole algebra. So there is an inner product due to Green, which is given by the following expression. So the inner product of F and G is a sum over all equivalence classes of F of M, G of M, and then I'm dividing by A of M, where A of M is the cardinality of the automorphism group of M. So this is kind of an orbifold inner product. And because I had an associative product and now I have an inner product, I can dualize things, and I can get from this a topological coproduct called delta, which goes from the whole algebra to, well, a completion, which is just in this case functions of two variables. And this is just nothing but, again, the transpose of the product using the inner product. And the expression is, so I give myself a function of one variable, and I have to attach to it, I have to associate to a function of two variables, and its value is defined as follows. So I sum overall p's. So I have a prefactor which comes from this orbifold factor in the inner product. And then I have an f of p at the very end. And then in the middle I have a factor which I have to explain. And this is the cardinality of subobjects of p such that L is isomorphic to M and P over L is isomorphic to N. So this is a simple, I mean, it's a simple exercise to see that the product which I've by now erased, coupled with this inner product, gives this as a co-product. And it's topological in the sense that this is defined to be functions with finite support. There's no guarantee that this is a function with finite support. So but of course, it is going to be topologically co-associative. And now there's a theorem due to Green. Which says that under a very restrictive assumption, which is that if the global dimension of the abelian category is less than or equal to 1, which means that so the x I are 0 for any I greater or equal to 2. So this is a very strong assumption, but it was true in the first and third example I gave. So category of vector spaces and coherent sheaves on a curve, then this whole algebra with the product and this coproduct is a topological in other words, the product and the coproduct are compatible. And this is really actually an if and only if. In other words, there's no hope that this coproduct is, I mean, if the two are compatible, then the global dimension of A is less than or equal to 1.
Is the incompatibility measured by an X group?
Yes, it's an X2. Okay. And then, just as a remark, the co-unit is also very easy to write. So the co-unit of a function should be an element of the field of definition, which I've chosen to be C, and that's just going to be F of the zero object. Okay. So let's see then an example of what kind of bialgebras you get. So I'm going to choose Q to be a quiver. So this is an oriented graph by definition with a set of vertices which are called I and a set of edges which are called E. And then the category I'll be looking at is the representations over the given field K of the quiver, whereby a representation of this quiver, I mean a collection VI labeled by the vertices and another collection XE labeled by the edges, where the VIs are finite dimensional vector spaces over the field. And then X of E, so here I have that E is an edge between a vertex I and a vertex J. And then X of E is a HOM of VI into VJ. Okay, so to each vertex associate a vector space, to each edge associate a homomorphism. So maybe let's do a kind of an example inside the example. So if I take Q to be just a graph with one vertex and no edges, then representations of Q are just vector space, K vector spaces. If I take Q to be the so-called Jordan quiver, which we already encountered, then the representations of this quiver are just given by V of vector space and X and an endomorphism. And then I could prescribe, if I wanted, that endomorphism be nilpotent. And then, for example, if I took so-called A2 quiver, so just two vertices and one arrow, this representation of this is given by just a pair of vector spaces, a finite dimensional vector space over K, and then X, and then the morphism from one to the other. Okay, now I'm going to assume further that Q is a finite Dynkin quiver, which means it's a Dynkin diagram of a simple Lie algebra where I just put some orientation on the edges. So to it corresponds a simple Lie algebra G, which has a triangular decomposition, n minus, a Cartan, and then n plus. And this also has a Cartan matrix. Given by the entries Aij, so that's 2 alpha I, alpha j, alpha I, alpha I. And now one can define for any complex non-zero complex number v, one can define the quantum group corresponding to G. And inside it, so I won't define it, but what I will define is there's a quantum n plus, there's a quantum deformation of the enveloping algebra of n plus. Okay, and this is defined as follows. So maybe I'll just remind you that n plus, or rather its enveloping algebra, has a presentation using these integers here, which is it's presented on by generators corresponding to the simple root, so the vertices of my Dynkin diagram, modulo the set relations, which say that add 1 minus aij ei applied to ej is equal to 0. And the quantum group uv of n plus is defined similarly as the associative algebra with the Q-set relations, which is to say that sum L is equal to 0, 1 minus Aij minus 1 over L, 1 minus Aij L, V, Ei, L, Aj. Okay, so you can expand this sum here. This gives you binomial coefficients, and then you replace these binomial coefficients by their Q analog, or rather their V analog, where V is the number you're using to define a quantum group. And this is what defines the quantum n plus. So this defines it as an algebra, but actually this also has a bialgebra structure, which I won't define for you. And it's a theorem of Ringel for the algebra part and Green for the bialgebra part that if Q is a finite Dynkin quiver, then this whole algebra, the whole algebra of its category of representations, so let me write FQ here, is isomorphic in a natural way to quantum n plus, and for V, where V is a square root of the cardinality of the field. Okay, so again, this is, I mean, a kind of a well-known algebra which comes from this category, and using a souping up of this construction, one can construct nice bases inside here.
So the result that you took before, does that fit in with the quantum groups?
That loop produces that ring of symmetric functions. That's not a finite Dinkin quiver, right?
But
you're right. I mean, with qualifications, what you say is correct. So if you start with any quiver, then you mustn't take the entire algebra. But within the whole algebra, you can find something which is the quantum group associated to the positive part of the corresponding Katz-Moody algebra. In this case, in the Jordan quiver case, it's just a Heisenberg algebra. I mean, there's no. And so that doesn't quantize, interestingly, in other words, it remains commutative. Still, I mean, so there's still a Q interesting Q parameter around, but it doesn't. Okay. So, I mean, what we've seen for maybe symmetric functions, but more strikingly for this case, is that what we get is always an algebra where the cardinality of the field, or maybe its square root, figures as a kind of deformation parameter. And maybe if you're more classically minded, you might want to set this quant deformation parameter to be equal to 1. Okay. And so that's what I would like to explain how you do that, and this is actually the context that will be relevant in tomorrow's talk. No, it doesn't matter.
So everything itself is the metric and the degree of the minus
d? Yes, yes. Okay, so to set Q is equal to 1, I'm going to revisit the definition of the product using what David calls function theory 101. Meaning, I'm going to remind you that the convolution of two functions, I wish we could teach that to our Northeastern undergraduates, but I remind you that the convolution of product is defined in this way. And I'm going to write it in a complicated way, which is as the push forward, push forward, or the pullback of and so I have, of course, to define what these push-pull operations are, or rather where they come from. So I'm going to look at, I mean, kind of obvious what to do is given the form that this has. You have to consider the set of all two-step flags like this. Then you have a first projection map, which is what is relevant for F, which goes to this set of all isomorphism classes of objects, and so associates to it the isomorphism class of N. You have a second projection, which associates to it the projection, the class of M over N. And then you have a third projection, which associates to it, which again maps into chi, which associates to it the class of M. Okay. And it's pretty clear that now that I've defined the maps, this is this. And in other words, what I wanted to stress is the fact that over this product defined over FQ has to do with counting points over FQ in the fibers of P3. weighted, of course, by f and g. And now I would like to set q is equal to 1. But now in favorable circumstances, I mean, if you take a variety and you count points and then set q is equal to 1, I mean, favorable refers to the fact of the possibility of being able to take this, then this is the Euler characteristic of, say, compactly supported homology of the variety over C. So now what are we going to do to define whole algebras over C now? I mean, that Q is equal to 1. Well, I'm going to explain how to do this for a special case where A is the representation category of an algebra, which is finite dimensional over the complex numbers now. So it's clear how to start. You have to look at the set of isomorphism classes of objects. Okay, which is now a moduli, which is now a stack. But it's a fairly bland stack. If I think of these as partitioned by their dimension, this is, in each dimension I have an affine variety which parameterizes all actions of my algebra over the d-dimensional vector space, and then I have to take the quotient by GLD. Okay, now I'd like to talk about functions on this stack. And I want to talk about functions in a way as to be able to make sense of these operations. So one way to do that is to take constructible functions. So maybe I'll just remind you what the definition. So a constructible function f on a variety or scheme x is a function of the form. So it's a finite sum of the characteristic functions of some locally closed subsets of the variety. And the advantage of these functions is that one can integrate these functions. So by definition, the integral of such a constructible function is a sum over I of AI times the Euler characteristic of YI. So in particular, if I have a map Px to y, and I have f, a constructible function, on x, I can define its push forward, which is a constructible function on y. And this is defined by simply, so the push forward of f at a point y is the integral of f on the preimage of y by p. So it's the integration on the fiber. Or otherwise said, it's integral on x of f times the characteristic function of the fiber. Okay, so now I can really having got a sort of a calculus, a sort of a space of functions where push, pullback, and push forward are defined, I can just recopy exactly this definition here to define a whole algebra. So maybe I'll re-say it. So remember, this is moduli stack of objects in, so this was a representation, what was it, did I call it, representation of R, maybe mod R. And then the whole algebra, by definition, is going to be constructible functions on this moduli stack. Maybe here I have to say one more word, because this is not a variety. And so by constructible functions here, I will just mean, by definition, the direct sum of GLD invariant constructible functions on this affine variety, which was calling rep D of R. And then the convolution product is defined just like this. I mean, well, I don't even have to. It's just P3 push P1 F P2. And then, so theorem one, so this, I'm sorry?
Before, when you introduced quivers, you used XA to be the equivalence classes of objects.
Yes.
As a set, not as a stack. And here you've switched to keeping track of automorphisms. And so
well, I'm really working downstairs. I mean, I'm working with the... Well, I'm only keeping track of automorphisms because I want to work over these affine varieties, which are parameterized, which are varieties. But really, the thing I'm interested in originally was also a stack, but I had gone to the quotient where I kind of killed automorphism by identifying equivalent.
But you don't get denominators
That's a very good point. Actually, you don't. And the reason you don't is that even though this is a Belan, but this is still a stack. But when you do this push forward, what you're integrating over is a Grassmannian, because you're integrating over the space of subobjects with M being fixed. And so it's a kind of, well, restricted Grassmannian is not the right word, but it is a kind of Grassmannian. So you slice it by dimension. Okay. And so that's smooth and projective. So there's no automorphisms. But you're right, in principle, there would be something to be careful about. But okay, so the theorem is that, again, this is an associative algebra with unit the same as before. So this was this one. Zero, the characteristic function of the zero object. Well, maybe I can erase this. Okay, and now I would like to define a coproduct. And as before, this is going to be a topological coproduct. So this is going to map onto the set of constructible functions on this Cartesian on the square. And the definition is going to be deceptively simple. So it's going to be just the F on the sum. So this seems naive enough. So if I hadn't told you about the Q picture first, you probably would be happier to buy this. Now you probably protest that this is too simple. And so let me make two remarks in this regard. When you work out the coproduct over a finite field, there's a sum of terms which this would be given by a sum of by all extensions of n by m, or maybe I mean m by n. But then there's a weight, and that way, so there's a term, of course, which would be the trivial extension, and then there's other ones. But all the other ones actually carry a k-star action, which is free. And so when you then take all the characteristics, so you take q is equal to 1, those terms all die. So life over at q is equal to 1 is much simpler here. And the second remark, which is maybe not so important for us, but still kind of relevant, is that over q, we guessed the coproduct by first realizing that there was a simple inner product and then dualizing the product. And here, there's the duality between the product and the coproduct completely breaks down. In other words, this is not by no means the transpose of the product. In quantum groups there's a principle called the quantum duality principle, which is a theorem which says that, in a line that. That quantum groups are hermaphrodites. I mean, they're sort of self-dual in a sense. But when you say q is equal to 1, that breaks down, so that you have to choose your side somehow. So, okay. And now the next theorem. These two theorems are, I guess, have, due to a variety of people, I think, Riedmann and Schofield. And I think this is also Riedmann, Schofield, and also Joyce, which says that this whole algebra now, with this product and this coproduct, is a topological bialgebra. And full stop. So this is irrespective of the global dimension of A. So you remember over finite field, there was a compatibility between the two only if A was of dimension less or equal to 1. Here, there is no such constraint. And so probably this means that very likely means that there's still over a finite field, there's a good coproduct to be found that should be compatible always, but that has not been. It's still an open problem to write that coproduct down. Okay, and then so last. Theorem, if Q is a Dynkin quiver of finite type, then the whole algebra of representations, this time over C of Q, is isomorphic to the universal enveloping algebra of n plus. So no, V is equal to. And this is true as bialgebras. Okay, well, I guess I should finish a little early, but that's...